Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
This is Nick Yurick, and you're listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You with Jeremy Shear and El Jordano Diablo.
Let the hate flow!
Available on the Lousy Weather Media Network.
Welcome to Let the Hate Flow Through You, your weekly dose of audible hatred. I'm Jeremy Shear.
El Jordano Diablo.
And this week on the show, we are joined by professional wrestler Magnum CK.
Hi, guys. I really appreciate you having me, and I'm looking forward to letting some things flow.
Good. Hopefully it's just hatred, because if other things are flowing... That's not us.
No fluids on this podcast. Well, except that one.
Fair enough.
The only thing flowing, the only thing flowing in my house these days seems to be alcohol.
Did you see, before we get into it, because we're all in Ohio. Did you see that Ohio set the record when they announced the 2-week quarantine? Ohio set the record for most gallons of booze bought in the entire country.
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, there's already very little amount of things to do in Ohio. And then when you take away those few things, what do you do?
Chug it down. I wonder about guys like Ricky Shane Page and Greg Iron. Like, are they just beating each other up in their own house? Like, is that what they're doing for fun?
They are probably definitely letting some hate flow.
Oh, without a doubt.
Speaking of which, Magnum, why do you hate people who hate everything?
Well, listen, I dislike a lot of things. I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, I don't use the H word. I don't say hate. I don't hate anything. I probably say it every day. I hate that. I hate that guy. I hate that person. My hates, if that's a thing, are probably more specific. It's probably like, it wouldn't make an interesting podcast to be like, oh, that guy that lives down the road. I hate that guy. Right. I started thinking about, as someone, I mean, I've been performing for like 18 years of my life, and editing and making this documentary over the last, couple of years, and editing the last several months, you have that twinge of like, dude, people, I think it's going to be well received. I think the right audience is going to really like it. But there are always those people who are going to be like, oh, the audio's messed up in this one part. Or like, what was that transition? Or like, who cares about this guy? And it just comes from this mentality of the knee-jerk reaction is to hate everything. And it's like some people, I think, replace their personality and try to make up for a lack of intelligence by trying to review everything and hate it.
I think that would be a very accurate thing, because like in my younger years I hated on everything. I know that, like, all three of us were like growing up punk rockers, like we're kind of conditioned to like hate everything. But like as you get older, you start to realize like, why would bitching about this be worth my time? It doesn't make any sense.
I think that's part of it. I mean, it's not like, I don't even think of it as complacency, because I think I probably now at this point in my life have more problems with more things than I ever have ever. Just professionally and personally, where I'm just like, why the hell would you do it like that? Or what's this guy saying on TV? Or like, what's going on? I'm more aware than I've ever been, so I probably have more problems with things. But I just think it's tough, because until I started taking improv when I lived in Chicago, the first thing they teach you is to kind of agree with everything. I mean, not necessarily like say yes literally to everything in the scene, that your partner brings up, but to move the scene along with that, you guys have all heard of yes and, right?
Like yeah.
Yes and everything. So I kind of started yes anding my life. And it doesn't mean I go along with every dumb idea that pops up, but I just kind of accept what it is and deal with it. And that's kind of what improv is. And
you've
so
been, you've been inducted into the cults on your way in.
Well, so my, you know, I my wife's heard me say this a bunch of times where it's like, you ever get a customer service person who you can tell right off the bat they're ready to not help you? Like they're just a human brick wall, and like they're so ready for you to be like giving up and walking away. Like you ask about something, like, oh, sorry, sir, I don't think we have that. And it's like you didn't check. Like you don't want to help me. I know you didn't check. I know you don't want to check, and I'm very sorry that you have to work here, but like this is kind of the deal, right? So my wife hears me say it all the time where I'm like, oh my God, take a fucking improv class. Like, will you yes and this situation, please? And I feel that way with everyone who hates everything. And you see it a lot with, you know, entertainment, and especially in wrestling. I don't know how many times, like I don't want to date this too much, but last night was the first night of WrestleMania. And yeah, there were definitely some moments where I was like, I gotta rethink my subscription. Like, what am I doing? And there were other moments where I was like, oh, that was cool. But probably more of the former than the latter. And then you hop on Twitter and they're like, cancel WWE. Oh, my God, garbage. And it's like, you know, it's all right. There's well, tomorrow.
That's the funny thing is because, like, last night, like, you and I were both on Twitter watching WrestleMania. And, you know, I think you and me are pretty close in age. I'm 32. And we've both been watching wrestling, like, our fucking entire lives. Sheer has been watching wrestling what, your entire life or close to it?
Close to it.
Yeah, and, like, last night I turned it on and, like, the way I described it to people was it was, like, taking Christmas away from us, but, like, it wasn't even Vince McMahon's call. Like, he doesn't really have – he could have postponed it, sure, but, like, I watched it. I turned it off after, like, two or three matches because it was just bumming me out, and I was like, I'll go back. I'll skim through it, see what people said are good. And then I went back today and I watched like two or three of the matches. I was like, those were fucking great. But I turned, you know, they front loaded all the bullshit.
Well, so, you know, I agree. I think that they probably should have just done it over the summer or something. But I mean, kudos to them for trying to provide some new entertainment. But I had a couple of thoughts. And speaking to your point of like canceling Christmas, it felt like they didn't cancel Christmas, but the rest of your family still had Christmas, but on the other side of like a Lexan glass wall, and you couldn't participate.
Yeah. Accurate.
And then my other thought was, you know, this empty arena WrestleMania was really an opportunity for them to do a bunch of new things, which I guess they did with their graveyard thing. But some of the other stuff was like, we're just going to pretend like there's an audience and we're just going to have a regular old match. And it just didn't work.
Yeah. It was weird seeing a hot tag with no crowd.
Dude, that was the first thought I had. I was like, you don't have to have a hot tag.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I still love the match, but it's because Nikki Cross reminds me of my mom. So every time.
Your mom was a Scottish psychopath.
My mom was a psychopath, but they look alike. So
fair enough.
I don't know. It's weird.
So like with the, I'm curious, like with the documentary coming up, cause and what, you know, we'll get into like all like, cause I definitely want you to tell like where it all came from. But like with that, I'm sure you've run into walls before where you're just like, dude, I'm either paying you to do this or exchanging something for you to do this. And you're not fucking doing your job. I've experienced that shit.
Every day. I mean, it's like I found myself, because I try to be nice to people. I mean, I think there was definitely a time in my life, probably 7 or 8 years ago, where maybe I was in my CM Punk phase or something, where it's like, I'm going to tell you exactly what I think, and you suck. And I quickly grew out of that. But you try to be nice, but there does come that breaking point where it's like, I have to stop, and now I'm going to stop this situation, and I'm going to reteach you. I'm going to explain to you how this works, okay? I have this money. I'm giving it to you. And I'm giving it to you not as a gift, but because to exchange for a certain good or service. Now, I did my part, which is go out and make money and give it to you. Now you have to come fix my fucking basement.
So, like, have you, I mean, like, have you experienced people in the course of doing this where you're just like, you're just a fucking hater. Like, you're not even trying to help.
Yeah, I guess I think of it more in the terms of, like, stupid or liar, right? So it's like you get into a situation where it's like, I know that you know how this is supposed to work, so you're either really stupid or you're now lying to me, pretending like you don't know how it works in order to serve whatever means you're trying to serve. So you get to pick one. It's like you're either not that bright, which is okay, or you're a liar, which I can't – we have a problem then.
Yeah. I still haven't figured out exactly what the purpose is for lying like that for the most part. I obviously one purpose is to bring you down a peg, but what's the point?
Well, I think one thing I'm slowly realizing in my life is every problem everyone has is some sort of extension of either some problem they have with themselves or something that they don't like about themselves. Like almost across the board, if you find someone who's criticizing you, odds are they're in some Freudian, weird, psychological, subconscious, unconscious way giving a self-indictment about something they don't like about themselves, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it does.
And I think when you understand that, you get a new level of empathy for other people. But that empathy well is shallower depending on how much that other person should have probably fixed this problem by now. It's like you know, someone breaks their arm, right? You're really upset for that person. And you're like, oh my God, that was a terrible accident. Like, are you okay? Okay, well, we'll get it looked at. But then if you go see them again 3 months later, and their arm is now black and blue and rotting off and hanging off, and you're like, what happened to your arm? You're like, oh, I just never got it fixed. And it's like, well, I don't feel bad for you anymore.
Yeah.
Because you knew what to do and you did it. So all these people who run around with their baggage, it's like, I get it. Okay, I have sympathy for you. But now you're like 38, so, and you have like a job and insurance. Can you get like a therapist or something? Like, why is this my problem?
Yeah.
That's quote of the podcast. Can you get like a therapist or something?
I mean, if therapy was more readily accessible, I would say that. But being
and that's right. Fair. That's fair. But I was with Shear. I was waiting for him to be like, you know, somebody breaks their arm and you feel bad for them. Then you find out they got a DUI and flip their car. Because that's what happened to me. I was like, oh, shit. He's like, he knows. I got it fixed, though. I'm doing all right.
Yeah, he looks like he's cybernetically enhanced on his little arm there. It's cute.
Just call me Steve Austin. Just not the one we all like. The other one.
Yeah, the $6 million one.
You know they're making the $6 billion man now? Did you hear about that?
You know, so I'm not a, speaking of hating things, I'm not the type of person that has a knee-jerk reaction to hating remakes. But I just don't always think it's necessary. Like, first of all, like, do we need another $6 million man? I don't know. But maybe you like that idea. Why don't you just write a new thing that's like that? So, like, a case in point would be Point Break, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I love the movie Point Break. And it's partly because it's a really good movie and partly because it's also a really bad movie. Right? So, yeah. It's really good and really bad in equal parts. So, I really enjoy it. Same reason I love Roadhouse. It's a really good movie, but it's also really, really bad.
And, and Terry Funk is in it.
Well, right. What the hell am I supposed to do? But it's like it's like Meatloaf, right? So not the singer, but like the food. So it's like, really, I mean, it's a lot of different ingredients that on their own are like, all right, okay. And then Meatloaf in itself is not like this amazing food, but something about it kind of hits the spot. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like Roadhouse is not a great movie, but like it's somehow really just like when you want it, it's there for you and you can heat it up in the microwave and it's kind of better the next day.
That's I call that like, I like, you know, there's comfort food, obviously, which me and Sheer are both accustomed to. But there's also like comfort movies and comfort television shows, like Star Wars music or Harry Potter music. Like if I put that on when I'm going to bed, like the movies, it like helps me go to sleep. Like I'm one of those people.
Yeah.
I don't hate remakes per se, unless it's like something that never needed to be remade. Like for whatever reason, I was scrolling through IMDb yesterday and they remade Jacob's Ladder with like a black cast, which is totally fine. But like, did that need to be done? And I was talking to Zach Schildwachter about it. And I was like, why would they do this? And he goes, it's a studio trying to get a quick African-American cash grab, like with a remake. And I'm just like, but like, does anybody really need that? Like that movie was fine with Tim Robbins and everything, you know, that's who it was, right?
Well, I mean, I have no idea about that, but really, so like Point Break is, so they did a remake of Point Break and instead of it being like a surfer movie, it's all about like snowboarders and it has no resemblance to the old movie. So it's like, I'm watching the trailer and I'm like, I'm in the movie theater watching the trailer and I had no idea that it was a trailer for the Point Break remake. And I'm just kind of watching and it's like a snowboarder and there's like a cop and he's undercover. And I'm like, okay, all right, I'm watching. And then at the end, it says Point Break. And I'm like, but wait a minute. So like, first of all, this feels nothing like the original Point Break. And secondly, it's called Point Break because it's a surf movie. Right? So like... Okay, so you're a big fan of Point Break and you want to make a movie like Point Break, then make your snowboard movie and call it anything else. Like, yeah. You don't have to call it Point Break. You can call it Breaking Point. I don't care. It has nothing to do with surfing, so you can't call it Point Break.
That's like, I was thinking when you were saying that, I was like, they should call it Vertical Limit 2. Point Break.
Well, certain things make sense, and I didn't see it. I haven't seen it, and I know it's a controversial thing, but, like, they remade the Ghostbusters. Okay, great. I don't care. I mean, but like, my biggest problem is people are like, oh, my God, Ghostbusters is ruined. And it's like, you know what you can do, though? You can do what I did, and I didn't go see the new one, not for any reason other than I just didn't go see it. But it didn't ruin the old one for me because I still got it over there on my shelf, and I could put it in. Like, they didn't go confiscate all the old Ghostbusters. They're like, ah, come on. Now we got a new one, so you need to give me your VHS copy of the original. Like, come on, we're rattling them all up. You can just go watch the old one, and it's still just as good.
Magnum, I'm shocked and appalled that you didn't see the new Ghostbusters because they improv, like, 45% of the dialogue.
Yeah, well, I like a lot of the people in it. I think that movie, if I remember right, came out while I was wrestling pretty actively.
Yep.
I think I just never got to the movie theater.
Well, all right, so, like, it's good, like, this kind of comes back to what we were talking about is, like, you know, like, people who hate everything is, like, people demonized that movie before it ever even saw the light of day. Yes. And I like all of the women in that movie, and Chris Hemsworth is in it. Who doesn't want to see that guy?
Yeah.
And he's funny and all this stuff, and, like, I watched it. I thought, honestly, the only problem was with it. They didn't, like, I didn't know that they did a lot of improv in it, but, like, it seemed to me that, like, the writing contained the cast. Because you have people like Leslie Jones, Kate McKinnon, especially, like, and all, you have all these funny people. And, like, I watched it, and there was something missing, and I didn't want to hate it. And I don't hate it. It's just kind of there, if that makes sense for me.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think, because I saw some things, not to jump around too much, but... there were some supposed leaked rumors about the new Grand Theft Auto game, and they were like, oh, one of the characters that you can play as might be a woman this time around for the first time ever in the series. And I saw all these people tweeting, and they're like, oh my God, oh, disgusting, I will not be buying that Grand Theft Auto. Like, oh my God, a female character, who cares? And it's like, well, first of all, you will be buying it. You will buy it. Yeah. You will pre-order it. You will be there at midnight, and you will be taking the next day off from the batting cage where you work. And you'll be playing it, trust me, and you'll love it. But also, like, I just don't understand what would be so inherently bad of just because there's a female character involved. Like, how does that ruin something? I guess maybe I just don't subscribe to that mentality. I saw that happen with Ghostbusters. Nobody even saw it yet. They're like, oh, terrible, disgusting.
So you were mentioning how a lot of people hate everything. There's something inherently wrong with how they view themselves, and that's why they hate everything. So these people that hate these female-led things, they have found... No, Jordan. That's not what I was going to say. They feel like, you know, they don't like the fact that there are nerds on the outside of society, but nerdery has commonly been a male-dominated area. And any threat to that is like, oh, no, they're coming to invade our space.
Yeah.
Even though they don't like occupying that space in the first place, they'd rather be a part of the mainstream. It makes absolutely no sense.
I don't get it. And as someone with two daughters, I mean, it really is – the toxicity kind of bothers me a lot. I understand, you know, people feeling threatened, I guess, but I think you're right. I think – there we go. Someone's stealing your car. Speaking of Grand Theft Auto –
whoever's Viper system keeps going off.
But if you hated Ghostbusters just because they said it was going to be an all female lead cast, then I would take a serious look at yourself and realize and try to understand why you hate women. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And that's the thing, is just going back to what, like, there's so much talent in that movie. I just don't get why people would write it off before ever, like. That's the thing, is people don't give anything a fucking chance. They just want to bitch about it.
You know, and it's funny that you say that, because I got together with my wife. It's been about 5 years now, but we were friends for several years before that. And she's always had this mentality of like, I can have an enjoyable experience with just about anything, like TV or movie or video game. She's like, no, it might not be my favorite. I might not like it. I might never watch it again. But so many people ruin their experience before they even have it, and they miss out on some good stuff. Like I never watched, and this might be a controversial topic for you guys. I don't know how you feel about it, but I never dreamed in my life that I would ever watch a Food Network television show. Ever. Never. I was like, why would I watch the Food Network? Like, I don't really cook. I don't need to see people cook. Like, why would I ever do it? And then a few years ago, she's like, hey, I want to watch Halloween Baking Championships. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, all right. I'm going to just like.
Where's my phone?
Yeah, I was like, yeah, sure. That sounds good. And then about 10 minutes in, I realized that I was like, oh, shit, they're making cookies. And now I watch it. Yeah, I watch it all the time. And it's because I gave it a chance, you know, and didn't prejudge it. But I'm like, oh, wow, this is educational. It's interesting. It's entertaining. It's fun. It's light. It's mindless. I don't have to sit and unpack everything. You know, it's not like reading Finnegan's Wake or something where I'm like, what's happening? What's going on? It's just like I can just watch them make pumpkin pie. And I'm like, damn, that looks like a good ass pie.
Well, and that's the thing, is like you can sit there and turn your brain off to that shit. Like, my fiance, for example, who you met before, Chelsea, she loves that shit because she can just turn her brain off and be like, oh, this is fun to watch. And her biggest thing is like watching, you know, because we all suffer with anxiety, depression, everything like that. And she will sit there and like, she'll be like, the pressure that they're under takes the pressure and anxiety off of me.
Yeah.
So she doesn't have to worry about it.
Well, you know, it's called like a higher frequency thinking or something. I remember I had a tryout for Evolve Wrestling, or not really a tryout. It was a seminar with William Regal, and it ended up, you know, you had a match, and then certain guys would get called back in the future. And I did a couple of those. And, you know, one time I forget where I was, somewhere up in Massachusetts, and it was kind of stressful because they do the seminar, and they're like, all right, guys, pair up, and you got about 10 minutes, we're going to start the matches. And you're like, oh, shit. And you don't know anybody, you know. So everyone's running around, all the people they know, and I didn't know a lot of the guys who were trying out. And the couple that I did had already paired up, and I was like, ah, geez, you know. So they paired me up with this guy who, and he's a nice guy. He was a nice guy, but he was very nervous, I think, and he didn't trust me. And everything I was – because you have a limited time. You have about 5 minutes to put together a five-minute match and then go do it, you know. So I'm trying to just, like, play the hits. I'm saying, like, let's do this. I do this well. Like, you know, I really should be the heel, but he wanted to be the heel. I'm like, okay, like, I just think it's going to be better. You know, so we're trying to figure this out together. And even something as simple as I remember saying, like, okay, then I'll give you a spine buster. And he's like, whoa, oh, a spine buster. Like, I don't know. And I'm like, dude, it's so – it's like, that's, please, trust me. So much so that referee Jake Clemens recently on Raw, right? He walked over because he heard what was going on and told the guy, like, hey, it's CK. Like, trust him. Just trust him.
Yeah.
And we had a little match, and it went fine. But the only reason it went fine is because I was getting ready to go out. They're calling us out. There's no entrance or anything. You just walk out, you know. And I'm getting ready to go out, and it's in front of Gabe Sapolsky and William Regal and, like, half of the Evolve crew, you know. And I found myself being really down. And I was like, this is going to be a disaster. Oh, my God. And then I remember this book I read that talked about higher frequency thinking. And I just stopped myself. And I was like, all right, don't prejudge this. Because if you say it's going to suck now, you're going to be right. So just hope for the best, try for the best, plan for the worst. And then it turned out being great. So just raising that thinking level to a little higher. So it's like, not to devalue it too much, but it's like, the Food Network is now a cornerstone of my entertainment life because I raised my thinking to be like, let me see if I'll enjoy this. Not making myself enjoying it, just opening up my mind to it. And then I'm like, oh, man, this is great.
Well, that's like another thing about Chelsea is, like, I think I've talked about this in the podcast before, is when we got together, she did not watch wrestling. She didn't know anything about wrestling. And it's been about 3 years now, and she's like a hardcore fan, and vice versa. Like, I just never was into drag queens. Like, I always liked RuPaul, but, like, I, you know, I knew RuPaul from the Brady Bunch movies when we were kids. but, like, it was funny because we started watching Drag Race, and then, like, on Monday or Tuesdays, like, I would watch Raw on Hulu, and she, like, at first it was, oh, I'm never going to get into this, but I'll watch it with you. Then, like, 2 weeks later, I'm noticing she's paying attention. And she's like, I'm paying attention, but I'm not going to learn any of these guys' names. And then, like, a week after that, she was like, I love Braun Strowman.
And then you check her browser history, and she's looking up, like, the Wikipedia for Ken Patera. And you're like, you're too deep.
Well, the fact that, like, she knows names like Gino Hernandez – and fucking, like, the Freebirds and she's the Von Erichs, like, because I watch all that shit. So, like, the fact that she gets into it and she's like, look at those people going crazier. Like, when we watch Attitude Era stuff, she'll be like, look at all the signs in the crowd. I'm like, yeah, that shit don't happen anymore. All the light bulb flashes. You remember that? Like, anytime there was a big slam, the whole arena would just light up.
Yeah, I miss that. It adds such a different element to it, you know, and mm-hmm. it was stark contrast last night with the silence and no flash bulbs at all, right?
Yeah, none whatsoever, zero.
I don't know. I thought it was really cool. Just like, you only, this only exists in this vacuum right now, and it added a whole different thing to it for me.
Yeah, but you hate everybody all the time at every moment, so you don't want to be around people ever.
No, I don't. But that's not because I hate everyone. It's because, like, I subscribe to a lower vibration of thinking, and I refuse to give anybody a chance because I know they're just going to make me angry. So instead of allowing that,
you just say.
I'm gonna save everyone's time and just tell you that I'm pretty disappointed in you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There it is. There it is.
So, what I was gonna ask him real quick, like, what about people in the wrestling business? Like, I know how toxic, like, the fan base is. I know how toxic the locker rooms can be. Like, what are some things where you hear over here people? I know that you're not in the locker rooms all the time, but like when you are, when you were, like you hear stuff that you're just like, God, will you shut the fuck up and just go like try? Do you ever
the problem is you get, and this is with anything, but I think it's really obvious in wrestling, is you get into the wrestling bubble, and you find yourself being unable to think outside of that bubble, and some really weird shit starts to be really oddly important to you. And a good example of this is, like, if you ever watch any of the Bret Hart documentaries, like Wrestling with Shadows,
yep.
Like some of the problems, and I love Bret, but some of the problems he had with stuff, I'm like, dude, you're way too close to this. Like, you're thinking about it, like, far too closely. Like, I was just listening this morning. I was cleaning up some of my garage, and I was listening to a podcast where they were talking about when Ric Flair went back to WCW and Vader was the champion. And they worked out, Dusty worked out this whole deal with Vader where he's like, all right, well, Flair's going to beat you for the belt, but then we might have you take the belt back from Flair, we don't know, but and Vader didn't want to lose the belt to Flair because the month before Ric Flair lost the belt to Rick Rude. And it's like, so his mentality was, okay, Flair lost to Rick Rude. Now if Flair beats me, I'm dog shit. Like, I'm the worst person here because I lost to the guy who lost. And like, from an outsider's perspective, it's like, I never would have thought of that. I would have been like, oh, wow, Rick Rude beat Ric Flair. And then the next month, I was like, oh, wow, Flair beat Vader. Wow, interesting. Wonder yeah. if they're going to have another one. You know, like, but when you're in wrestling and you're in that bubble, people start to really, really overthink that type of stuff. And they think, like I saw it happen even in AIW. They would bring in – I mean, it happens anywhere. And I won't say their names, but some people pop in my head that would come in and be booked as a guest star for, like, the main event. And it's one of those positions where the person that they're wrestling – is a local person or an AIW regular, and this is a big deal for them. But the person that was brought in, they're like, I'm just going to wrestle in Cleveland and I don't care. And you're in the locker room and you hear the star or whatever shooting down every idea because they're like, well, that doesn't work for me, brother. I can't take that move from you because that makes me look weak. And it's like, oh, I guess maybe you forgot it's fake wrestling.
And in a fucking and in a gym, like, what the fuck is wrong with
you? No, I mean, it's like in a movie, like you mentioned Chris Hemsworth, if like you know, he's in the Avengers and like the fucking the Skrulls are coming in and firing up on him, he's like, well, I'm not gonna sell for the Skrulls because, you know, who'd they ever beat? No, I can't. I'm not, like, in any other medium, it doesn't make any sense. But in wrestling, it's like, oh, I can't take your finisher from you because it makes me look weak. And it's like, I don't, what, who cares?
That's like with Jim Ross and fucking, like, all the guys that really know what they're talking about. Even if Pritchard fucking makes up stories, he does know what he's talking about. And like, I, like you said, in the indies, like, I went back on IWTV and I watched when the Bucks wrestled in AIW before, because that was before my time. And I wanted to see the match they had, and it was with fucking To Infinity and Beyond. So when I found that out, I was like, this is going to be a great match. And To Infinity and Beyond were the champions, and the Bucks obviously ended up losing. And the match was still really good. Like, and like, if you listen to like Jim Ross, winning or losing doesn't fucking matter, like, at all. It has more or less to do with the fact that getting over. It's not winning or losing, it's getting over so you can make money, because that's what it's all about anyway.
Yeah.
And I mean, entertaining people.
I think it matters only to the extent of, like, you know, if you're just a guy who sucks and loses all the time, then
sure,
you're probably,
if
not
that's your
have a
gimmick
career. But like, I would love to see Ric Flair's win-loss record, because I can almost guarantee you he's lost more times than he won. Or like, even I saw a statistic about Hulk Hogan that had his WWF win-loss record against his WCW win-loss record. And he lost, like, you know, 4 out of 5 matches in WCW. And it just didn't matter. It just didn't matter, because that's not really what you remembered. I mean, I'm sure if you pulled up my win-loss record on Cage Match or whatever the hell, like, it would probably be underwater. I mean, I'm sure I've lost more matches than I won. But that's not – hopefully that's not what people remember. Hopefully they remember – you know, the person who beat you for the belt, sure, that they need the rub, but also hopefully they just remember the fact that you did a really good job and they want to see you come back next time.
Yeah, that's the idea. Comedians get caught in a bubble as well, where dumb shit matters to us, like where we are on the lineup and and who we're roast battling against, because this scrub shouldn't be able to take me on. And I've definitely said that a few times.
I've compared wrestling to stand-up. They're very similar lifestyles, yeah. And very similar, like, just from doing a little bit of stand-up myself, but just knowing comedians and stuff. The lifestyle is really close.
Yeah, we're all insane. for the same reasons, like, we need attention but don't want it. What the fuck? How is this supposed to work?
100%. I mean what else? Like, what was the root of this, though? Like, people who hate everything, like, what was the thing that made you be like, that's what I want to talk about?
Well, probably just is top of mind with releasing a documentary. I mean, this is a movie that we probably spent 18 or 20 months on. I mean, we started
easily
almost 2 years ago. And I probably spent 40 to 60 hours just organizing footage, procuring wrestling footage from the last 15 years from all over the world and putting it all together, watching it, cataloging it, then taking our footage, going through it, watching it, cataloging it, and then editing, 200 plus hours editing. I mean, it's a huge task. I mean, it was a big job. And in some ways, this whole quarantine thing, not to make light of it, but it worked out in my favor because I ended up having a lot of extra time and I just sat in the editing chair. But that's top of mind because that is something that you think about, of just everything we've ever released or ever done. Some of the, and we talk about it in the documentary, 1,000 people could say, great job, you're the best. Or, like, I've literally this week gotten messages from people who are like, dude, you're my hero. Like, you talk about mental health and, like, you're inspiring. And that's not my goal, to be an inspiring person. But it's nice to hear that stuff from people. But then all that shit goes out the window when one guy's like, this sucks. Yeah. 5,000 people could be like, you're the best. There are people who have my logo tattooed on their body, like, forever. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me, and like, that blows my mind when I see it. But all those memories fall out of the back of my brain when someone's like, yeah, who's this guy, he kind of looks weird, what an idiot. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all it takes. It is a pain in the ass.
I remember it was that the spinebuster footage I have of, like, that perfect spinebuster when you got up and did the fucking, like, it looks great. And there was some dude who's like some internet fucking wrestling kid who's maybe got like 1,000 followers, maybe, like, but also follows 2,000 people, whatever. It's just some fucking dork. And he was talking to, if this was a year and a half ago at this point, but like, he was talking about how, only WWE matters because those are the people who make money and blah, 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 all this bullshit. And I shared that video of you doing the spine buster. And the guy was like, I don't care if somebody does a good spine buster in front of 100 people. I was like, but you just said it was a good spine buster, asshole.
Well, I think there was some of that. Alex Riley, is that, right, was he a guy who was in WWE?
Yeah.
Alex Riley, yeah.
Yeah, because he was really coming down hard on the indies while he was in the WWE and was like, oh, it's not real. That's good. Because I don't know that he ever came up to the indies. I think he just kind of started in their kind of feeder system. And he was kind of crapping on all the indies. And then he lost his job and kind of shut up about the indies. It's like one of those things where it's like, be careful whose toes you step on the way up, because you're going to, everybody comes back down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can't wait until comedy starts up again and everybody's on square one. It's going to be insane. I can't wait. I think one of the reasons that that one little voice like gets you so hard is because that mirrors the own little voice that you have in the back of your head telling you, the psychic sensor, as if you will, it's saying that your shit sucks. And you just now you someone has given voice to your self-doubt, and it makes it suck so much more.
That's exactly it. My therapist has actually pointed that out for me. One of the first issues that we dealt with when I started with this therapist was this imposter syndrome that she said I had. She's like, you're always waiting for someone to kick in your door and figure out that you don't know what you're doing, or that you're a sham, or that you're not good at this. And she's like, that's never going to happen because, one, nobody cares that much. And secondly, you are really good at a lot of stuff. And she's like, you know, no one's going to come up to you with a plaque that says, or a diploma that says, you're officially a good wrestler, and here you go, and no one can ever take that away. Like, it doesn't even have to be wrestling. I mean, it was everything. And then I started noticing those patterns, and you realize that our brains are trained to pick up patterns, right? Like a dot and a dot and a little half circle at the bottom is just a dot and a half circle. But our brains see a smiley face, right? Yeah. So because our brains are trained to look for patterns, our brains are also trained to find confirmation of all the stuff that our brains are afraid of, right?
Yeah.
So it's like one person says that, oh, yeah, he did a great spine buster, but it was in front of no one, so that must mean he sucks. And then your brain's like, see, I told you, we suck. We're terrible, you know. So I think the key is you'll never silence that voice, but you have to kind of like make friends with it is what my therapist told me. She's like, you know, treat that voice like you would a friend. You wouldn't necessarily shut out a friend or tell them they're an idiot or, you know, just kept them out of your life just because they're having a problem or an issue with themselves. You would talk to them. And I don't literally sit and talk to myself. I mean, not about that anyway, I guess.
Yeah.
But you look at that as part of your brain, like a little kid almost, where it's like, okay, like you're just worried and it's okay to be worried, but that's probably never going to happen.
My therapist is actually starting that compartmentalized, like, child father stuff with me too, so
you're actually he's probably the best one to come on the show and talk about mental health, because like you've been a fucking like godsend for that. I've seen so many fucking tweets, and I've talked to you about it before. It's like, because I remember when I first got into therapy, I had texted you and was like, hey dude, I'm nervous, and you're like, don't be nervous, it fucking works, trust it.
Well, because I was just literally just yesterday, the day before. I don't know. Time means nothing at this point. I don't know. I don't really know what day it is. It doesn't matter. I don't check the mail.
I didn't do that before, by the way.
For some people, this is just a lateral move. You know, they're like, welcome to the club. Just the other day, I had someone messaging me because I'm just open about therapy, and they were just asking about it. And I just told them, I was like, I don't know why it works, but there's something about our brains where when we sit down across from another person that we don't have an intimate relationship with, and we talk about intimate things, it softens everything, or it snaps it into place, because it's stuff you would never talk about to someone you don't know. And I've been to the same therapist. I think I've been with her for like over 2 years now. I still don't know her. You know what I mean? I mean, like we just sit down for an hour every couple, whatever. And then, and we know each other. She knows me emotionally very well, but because we're not friends or because we don't have a relationship, that continues to work. So there's something about that that just works. And it's funny you say about me talking about mental health, because of all things, somebody actually was criticizing me for that. They're like, oh, look at you. Like, look at you talking about therapy, and you just want everyone to be okay and not depressed. Like, wow, you're such a hero. Wow, I hope you hope everybody thinks that you're just so great. It's like, listen, first of all, wow.
Hold on, you need therapy.
Right, like, please, like, call 911. pull the fire alarm and just wait for someone to come get you. I private messaged him, and I was like, listen, I don't do any of this stuff because I want to seem a certain way. I mean, we all have that. I mean, we all have our social media is playing the hits of our life. I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
But I'm just sharing it because, one, social media to me is like an open journal, and it's therapeutic. Like, I don't like something. I'm like, hey, this sucks. I don't want to deal with this. Or, hey, this is great. Look at my kids. And then the other thing is just sharing your experience. I mean, we're all narcissistic at least this much. I mean, we're sitting here with cameras on us recording, hoping that someone's going to listen to us. That's narcissistic, right? Like, yeah. I put on spandex tights and fake leather boots and took my shirt off in front of 400 people and hoped that they'd cheer for me. That's narcissistic, right? Mm-hmm. But your motivations don't have to be narcissistic. I mean, me just saying, right, like, hey, get help. You don't have to kill yourself. You don't have to live miserably, or you don't have to ruin all of your relationships. You can go get help somewhere. That's not me trying to be a hero. That's me trying to be like, hey, I waited about 12 years longer than I should have to go to therapy, and if I could go back in time, I would have done it sooner. So maybe if I say this, you'll be like, oh shit, I'll go too. That's it.
Yeah, it's tough though, because that voice of the guy saying, oh, you're a big hero, I've heard that voice in the back of my head when I talk about mental health, because it's like, am I presenting myself this way to get clout, or am I doing this to actually help people? And sometimes I don't know. And it's a question that I've always had to struggle with.
I mean, I guess there's always, in anything you do, there's a little bit of that. I mean, you know, I also teach a lot of things. I mean, I run some theaters, and I have several jobs. But one of my jobs was narcissistic.
Well, one of my jobs. I teach a lot of things.
Well, I mean, I teach acting. I teach English. I teach people how to fillet themselves on podcast live. One of the things I teach is school English. You know, I teach eighth graders English, and you know, it's easy to say like, oh, I do it for the kids, and like, you know, people say that, and there is a part of that I do care, but I do it for paycheck. Like, I don't need anyone to know that I do that. I don't need an award for teaching. I just want to make sure that they're getting a good education and that my paycheck comes every 2 weeks. Like, that's it.
Keep the money coming.
Yeah, come on. But yeah, I'll teach from home. I don't care. Is the paycheck still coming? Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. What do you want? What do you want me to teach today? I don't. Whatever, yeah, you throw something.
Yeah, I'll teach.
I'll that shit.
Yeah, I'll read him a book from the woods. I don't care.
I don't know if woods books were the same thing when you were a kid, but that's generally where we hid the pornography.
Oh my God! I was just talking to my friend Mike, who I made the movie with. We were talking about it because I joked about something, and he made a joke about finding pornography in the woods, and then he put like in parentheses, like, by the way, that actually happened. A friend of mine and I, we were running around the woods doing, you know, messing around, playing around, and when we were like 10, and we found all these like hustlers or something. I was like, dude, my friend and I did the same thing. I was like 12. We were running around the woods just like trying to find cool sticks. And like, this is before smartphones, right? So like,
yeah.
It's like we would play Nintendo 64 until we got kicked out. And then it's like, let's go find rocks.
Let's go find porno.
Yeah. And then like, but we found this bucket. And it was an upside down bucket. And we're like, okay. And my buddy's all nervous. And he's like, I'm going to see what's in here. And I'm like, I wouldn't. Like, it could be a snake. It could be a head. Like, I don't know what it is. And he pulls up the bucket. And all these crumpled up, like, Hustler magazines fell out. And it was like someone's stash. Like, they did that to keep them dry. And I'm like, what is the situation in your life that you're, like, 500 feet into the woods in some little clearing with a stash of pornography? Like, where do you live? Like, what? It's before smartphones, but like, what's your deal? And also, like, you're coming out here to do this?
Like, thank you. That's just what I was about to say. Is like I, because I found a porno mag when I was like 9, 10 years old, and I hid it in the woods behind my house. And like, I think about it now, and it's like, obviously I was too early to do what you're supposed to do with porn. And I was like,
You mean appreciate it for its artistic merits?
Yes, exactly. And I'm sitting there and I'm just like listening to you. I'm like, wait a second, why would anybody go off to the woods to fucking crank it? Like, who does that?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, like, I just feel like you gotta have a crawl space or something in your house.
Look, some people cannot achieve an erection without a cool wind blowing on their face and leaves underneath their butts.
I, I like, you know what, this guy's like, you know what gets me going? The threat of a Sasquatch. That's the only way I can do it. There's got to be a potential Bigfoot around, and then I can get going.
Yeah.
That's great.
Oh. Speaking of remakes of the $6 Million Man, that Bigfoot from the Venture Brothers.
Yes, great show.
Yeah. So tell us more about this documentary that's coming out on Thursday.
Well, I mean, it's just kind of the story of my life in wrestling, but I think it's a lot more than that. I mean, there's a ton of footage of wrestling in it, but a lot of people talk on it. I mean, John Thorne from AIW and Hornswoggle and Colin Delaney and RJ City and my wife is a prominent figure in it. It started out, we were making a sequel to our previous wrestling documentary called Marking Out. That was just all about wrestling fans. And I was supposed to be just a small part of this sequel. It was like, hey, remember Chris, he's marking out? Like, oh, he's wrestling again. He went back to wrestling. That's fun. Look at him. And then everything happened with my back injury and getting really popular at AIW at kind of the same time. So the movie changed to a kind of its own thing. So it's just kind of the story of that. But it's also – I mean, it has some kind of more serious moments, I guess, but it ended up being really fun, and I think it's pretty funny. I mean, there's a lot of comedy in it, and I think it's become just kind of a human interest piece. It's just like it talks about mental health and comedy and wrestling and injuries and just what that whole life is like, and it just culminates with my last match that I had at about a year and a half ago. And I don't know. I don't know that it has a mainstream appeal, like millions of people are going to love it. But for me, I had such agita and anxiety about getting this out there, and I couldn't really put my finger on it. And my therapist was like, well, this is your legacy piece. And I didn't really know what she meant. She's like, this is you started wrestling 15 years ago. You have about 8 years of wrestling experience, you know, because I did it twice, two different kind of runs. And she's like, you just don't want that lost. You know, you want that out there. And that's exactly what it is and what it became. And I think it's entertaining. I mean, I've watched it too many times just because you have to, when you edit, you have to keep watching and keep watching and watching again. And then finally watching the final edit to make sure it's all smooth. And like, I'm sick of it. But I think it's going to be an interesting little human interest documentary.
Hell yeah. Okay.
And where can we find it?
It'll be on YouTube on Thursday and Amazon Prime allegedly on Thursday, April 9th as well. They're having some delays just with all the staffing issues. But it'll be up there. If not on the 9th, it'll be up there really soon. And that's actually my birthday too. It actually kind of worked out. My birthday was coming up and I was like, let's just make the release date on my birthday. That's not
narcissistic. Hell yeah. Not at all. Not even a little bit. That day is about you.
It is. I mean, I was just listening to another podcast with my wife because we're all trapped in the house. So we were listening to a podcast and a couple of guys who basically their whole brand is just about them and their life. And they talk about their thoughts and everything. And it's like, yeah, that is kind of a narcissistic thing, but it's interesting and it's helpful because I hear their perspectives on stuff. And I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, I think I feel that way too. Or like, I never thought about it. So with this documentary, I hope that that's what people take away from it, because I think it can be a little motivational too.
Well, I think that, cause I mean, Marking Out was so much fun, like getting to see that. Cause I didn't know you when you were doing your old podcast and all that stuff. And I went back to go look for all that after I watched the movie, because I didn't watch the movie until maybe, I don't know, I was still living downstairs, so like 2 years ago. And it was so much fun. Like, I've watched it a few times since. It's got a ton of rewatch value. Yeah. And like, when you, because Mike, I think it was at your last match, Mike took me downstairs to go record like my thoughts on you. And I think he asked me what your favorite Magnum CK moment was, which if you remember is the one where you broke your nose and then were really not happy when you dropped that elbow. And I never see, like, I saw anger in your face. You just flipped him off, like, fuck you, and then just dropped this awesome elbow. It's, like, so out of character for you, but also so Magnum CK. And I was like, that's perfect. That's great.
Well, I appreciate it. That was a weird night. I was at the hospital. The bleeding wouldn't stop. So I was at a Cleveland area hospital on a Friday night till like 4 a.m.
So much fun. If I'm not mistaken, it was the Lakewood Hospital too, where they don't really have a whole lot going on.
Well, it was wild because there were like some people screaming down the hallway and like some guy was on drugs and like it was a whole thing. And they didn't believe me because I came in just covered in dried blood, you know, and it's still leaking out of me and like a clamp on my nose. And they thought that I had gotten in a fight or something. And I was like, no. There's a pro wrestling show down the road. It was just an accident, you know. And then I'm having to like smarten up the nurses and doctors because they kept coming back and they would say that like they leave me alone for about a half an hour. Because they gave me some kind of coagulant to stop the blood, and they wouldn't let me leave till it stopped. And they kept coming back with different people, and they're like, so what exactly happened? Like, seeing if my story changed. I'm like, listen, I'm sorry, but Hulkamania wasn't real. It's fake wrestling. This guy was my friend. It was an accident. He hit me in the face. And they just went like, "Do you want to press charges?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I want to press charges against AJ Gray." Like, yes.
Good luck finding him.
Right. Yes, I would like to press charges against the guy with the fake wrestling and then kind of cash in. Let me take his Oldsmobile. Like, where are they? No, I want to go home.
Ah, yes.
So where can we find you on the internet, Magnum?
The best place for the movie especially is probably Twitter, @TheMagnumCK on Twitter. I'll put all the links and stuff, everything, on Thursday when it goes up. I'll put it all on there.
Okay. We'll share that for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Definitely. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. Oh,
my pleasure. Thank you very much, guys.
Yeah. So, Jordan, I don't think we're going to find anybody that hates people who hate everything as much as Magnum CK.
No, there is another. The world dies again. I'm a rapid offender. You can see right through my skin. I don't care about making mistakes. I keep standing up and falling on my face. Feed me numbing ages. Drag me to the ring. Another discharge vapor. Daniels in drunkenness. I keep a brood in my brain and under the punches.
This has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.